Well, last week we entered the story on Palm Sunday, and today is Monday, the day after that triumphal entry. This is the story of Jesus in the temple, and it's a story that occurs in all four of the Gospels. You know, it's a really important story if all four of the Gospel writers include it. So it's Monday, and Jesus goes to the temple. It's worth pausing there to reflect a little bit about the temple. Our painting for today shows just one small corner of the temple. The temple sat on a mountain on a hill in Jerusalem called the Temple Mount. And at this point in history, it has many functions. First and foremost, the temple functioned as the house of God. It was built by King Solomon. It has the Holy of Holies where God rests, where God resides. And Jews at this time still believe that it's necessary for the high priest to offer a sacrifice once a year in order to fully cleanse the people of their sin. In addition to the Holy of Holies, this house of God is something to behold. Now, as we might remember from Old Testament history, the temple had been destroyed, but in this point, it's an active construction site. It's been under construction for 46 years. Now, can you imagine living with all that dust for 46 years? It took more than 46 years to be rebuilt because the temple was huge. It was 1.4 million square feet. That's the size of two Fiserv auditoriums put together, or a little bit bigger than Mayfair Mall, which is 1.1 million square feet. So the temple isn't a small building on a little hill. It's a complex on the top of a hill. And so that's just one portion of how the temple functions as a place for Jews to worship. Now, the temple complex has a series of courts. There's the court of the priests, the court of Israel, the court of women, the court of the Gentiles, all on the exterior leading to that holy of holy place where only the high priest is allowed to go. And so at this point in our story, Jesus was in a very specific portion of the temple complex. He was in the court of the Gentiles. This is the location in the temple where Jews could come and pray, as the temple was meant to be a house of prayer for all nations. Second, in addition to being the dwelling place for God, the temple is the only place where sacrifices could be offered. And so, because of this, folks had to come and purchase animals. The animals were sold in this outer court, the court of the Gentiles. Vendors were necessary because pilgrims would travel from all over to the temple to worship. And according to Jewish law, in order to offer a sacrifice of worship, the animal had to be unblemished. So if you were a pilgrim walking for days or weeks to get to Jerusalem, and you have a lamb, you're probably not going to take that lamb with you. It might not make the journey unscathed. It was much easier, too, to take money in your pocket. And so in addition to vendors selling animals for sacrifices, there were money changers present to take your money. They took your money because there was a third function of the temple, a temple tax. How else were they going to pay for the construction of the temple? They didn't have a capital campaign like we do. They just charged people a tax every time they wanted to go to worship at the temple. 2 denarii. 2 denarii is 2 days' wages. And so money changers were necessary because folks were coming all over, and the temple would not be able to receive Roman or Greek currency. Not because it was foreign currency, but because on the coin was the face of Caesar. And that was blasphemous, to have the face of a person on a coin. So people coming to the temple would take their money and they would change it for shekels, pay their temple tax, and use the shekels to purchase the animals for sacrifice. Now, those are the three religious functions of the temple. But the temple is not just a place for religion. It has a place in civil society. At this time, the Roman Empire had control over everything, especially the temple. And so flying at the top of the temple was a flag for the Roman Empire with an eagle. This was to symbolize that even the temple, even religious faith, was under the control of the Roman Empire. Roman guards were stationed throughout the temple complex, especially during the week of Passover, when so many pilgrims were allowed to come in and worship. And so, because of this, the temple also has a secular function. It's a bank. So in addition to having money changers present, there are money lenders present. It's a good business opportunity. You've got so many people coming in to buy things and change money. Might as well set up some lending tables too. Now, this is counter to the original intent of the temple, but Caiaphas, the high priest who is in charge of the temple, well, he caved a little bit. In order to allow his Jewish compadres to worship at the temple, he cut a deal with Rome and said, you can allow your national bank to set up shop here. He did what he could to allow people to worship freely. So you've got a bank set up, actually more like ATMs set up all over the temple complex. People could go to borrow money, they paid off their debts, they conducted business. The high priest Caiaphas had to go along to get along. And so here we have Jesus in the court of the Gentiles, this place where there are all these vendors, sort of like the food court in Mayfair Mall, maybe with a bank attached to it. And Jesus comes in, and he's surrounded by vendors. There's lots of folks crowding around because this is the place where the Gentiles pray. This is the place where the pilgrims get their sacrifices. This is the place where people change money. This is the place where people lend money. And so here's Jesus. You've got a lot of people. And at this point in Passion Week, Jesus has been so calm. He's been so Jesus-like. But in this moment, Jesus shows a flash of righteous anger. He loses it. He comes in and he throws the table over. And he, in the Gospel of John, it says he takes a whip and he drives the animals out. Well, what angered Jesus in this moment? Why clear the area in the court of Gentiles now? Again, the temple is large. And so many people wouldn't have even heard or seen Jesus do this. It would be like Jesus flipping a table over in the food court. But if you're shopping in Macy's, are you going to hear a table being flipped over? No. You might hear about it later from the crowds and the security guard. So what does the table represent? What is Jesus flipping over in this moment? Jesus was flipping a table, saying the way that you understand this temple and worship for God has been perverted. The way you view your relationship with God as a transaction is not the way it is supposed to be. By flipping a table over and clearing the area, Jesus is flipping over their understanding of what it means to worship God. He's literally clearing this court to make a point. He's making a point, and he's righteously angry because folks have been taken advantage of. Their pure desire to worship God using the laws that they have, following the commands that they have, has been muddied with banking and lending and charging people more than they should, taking advantage of the poor. People who want to worship God have been taken advantage of. And so Jesus displays righteous anger, but he's not just angry for the sake of being angry. He's taking action. He's taking a stand for what he believes to be true. Worship God should be pure and whole and not muddied by injustice. Jesus is boldly pointing out that there are so many layers that have grown up around the temple, that the essence of the temple as a house of prayer has been lost. When we are charging people taxes and taking advantage of them, when we're putting a political flag in the temple and saying this isn't just your temple, but this is to be controlled by guards and the Roman government, well, then the temple has become something very different than a house of prayer. And yet, what Jesus does in this moment is risky. The Roman guards are there, and word travels pretty quickly to the religious leaders. Well, how will flipping a table over change anything? I wonder, what are the tables that need to be flipped over in our lives or in our world? What injustices need to be flipped? What blocks to our wholeness, to our right relationship with God, need to be cleared away? What identity needs to be restored? In our lives of faith, sometimes table flipping, dramatic action is required. Sometimes we need to stop and clear the table to be able to see the root of something. So what in our world needs to be flipped? Well, as I was reading the local news, I was reminded yet again that racism is one table, one injustice that needs to be flipped in our community and beyond. And the story that reminded me of that is the story of a family here in Cedarburg, a biracial family, who received an anonymous letter telling them that they were infecting the area. The family posted the letter on social media in an effort to expose this hateful racism. And what happened? A table was flipped. The community responded with love and support for this family. Not just in a private way, but in a public way. Not unlike Jesus going to the court of Gentiles, a place where lots of people could see. And so folks stood in the center of Cedarburg and had a peaceful sign of protest and love, saying, "We love this family. We welcome all people here in our town." They did this because a table needed to be flipped, right? We needed to take an action. Now, that's just one story in our community, and there are many more. We all have tables in our personal lives and in our community lives that need to be flipped, injustice that needs to be righted, blocks to our discipleship that need to be cleared away and removed. And so I wonder, as we head into this coming week, what tables for you, what tables for me, what tables for us need to be flipped? And how might God be inviting us to risk for the sake of God's kingdom? In the name of the Creator, the Redeemer, and the Sustainer of us all. Amen.